This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
At least. Welcome, welcome to your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, 100.7 in the Willamette River Valley, and in the ether, you get that one.
Yeah, KBOO.fm.
Right. So today's show, for me at least, was sparked when I read 10 things that Gene Stapleton had to endure while filming and recording All in the Family. And it mentioned a gamut of real issues. And I thought about how I felt about that show when I was a youngster. And, oh, did I say that?
Mm-hmm, you did.
Oh, good golly. Okay. Man, I'm telling on myself today. But must be the sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Perhaps you should preface this by Gene Stapleton, which acted in All in the Family.
I was going to say that. See, now I'm having one of those moments, and I'm trying to remember what her name is. Edith Bunker. There we go. So Gene Stapleton played this character in what was one of my favorite shows as a young person, All in the Family. And it dealt with some interesting issues that made me really pay attention sometimes, because I could see some of those same issues in my life and the people that I knew. And some of those issues were most definitely universal issues, such as going through menopause, such as dealing with health issues like breast cancer, such as trying to find your voice amidst those who had a stronger or louder or more garrulous voice than yours. And so when I read of her passing, I thought, This was a show that had a profound effect on me. And then I started thinking about other shows, because I had met up with some friends of mine, and we were talking about shows such as MASH and others that captured our attention. And I realized once again that it was a profound effect that some of these shows had on me. Now, you know, as I was thinking after we communicated this weekend, I wanted to even add a commercial, because it was a commercial that had a very profound effect on me, and I'll share that a little later. But what we wanted to do was talk about how sometimes art leads life. Yes, it's true. Everybody's heard the adage that art imitates life. But sometimes it leads, because it has a way of shaping our values, not always directly paralleling whatever the story or the idea or the concept that the show has. Sometimes in total antithesis, you know. Sometimes it's a synthesis. We look at that and we think, oh, okay, maybe it broadens my horizon a little bit or my perspective a little bit, but it doesn't necessarily change it. But still, whatever change I have undergone has been because I've been exposed to this particular set of ideals or thoughts. And so we wanted to ask people to share, you said popular art. Do you want to include movies?
Sure. If we can do commercials, maybe.
No, well, I only have one commercial, and it's really profound. You want me to share it now?
I'll
wait a little bit in this show. I'll do a teaser. So I know that for a lot of our listeners that are over 40, yeah, okay, that's a nice safe age, TV had a different feel to it. It's not to say it was any more or less contrived, but it was making a change in the 60s and 70s by actually trying to deal with some of the larger, more serious issues in our life. So, for example, with All in the Family, with Carol O'Connor and Gene Stapleton, one of the interesting programs, episodes rather, was Archie dealing with his rampant racism. And I believe it was Sammy Davis Jr. that sat in his chair.
Mm-hmm.
And he was conflicted. yet he dealt with it. And that was one of the things that I thought was a groundbreaker. Now, there were other shows where people found some measure of strength, but the show in the end ended up letting people down. Or maybe it improved and actually dealt with some of the other issues. There were some shows that came out of the 80s and 90s, which did the same thing. There were a lot of people who, out of the 90s, really liked Friends. I was not one of them.
And there's a variety of opinions you offered that for people of a certain age, they might remember certain television shows and contrasted with the impact of television since their age of maturation. Regardless of your age, I think media continue to play a role in how we encounter the world, how we reflect upon the world, how we interact with one another. So whether the media of your childhood was influential or not, it had played a role in the way your life was shaped. One of the things about the shows you mentioned, specifically MASH and All in the Family, which was shows that began in the 70s, were that they had a not too hidden social commentary aspect about it, and that they were reflections of some of the world situations that were happening in the midst. So, for example, MASH, which was placed in 1950s in the Korea conflict, it was dealing with some of the conflicts the United States people in the United States encountered during the Vietnam era war. All in the Family dealt with a lot of social issues that Celeste mentioned, some women's rights,
health issues,
mm-hmm. Race issues, war and peace. And it had an impact in terms of shaping the public conversation around these issues. Now, media has changed radically in the last 40 years or so. So where some of us, when we were children, there were maybe three television stations. And
then the PBS station.
And PBS, and the television went off the air at midnight with the Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we live in an age where we are inundated with media 24/7. So certainly things have changed, but we want your perspective on what television shows or maybe commercials have influenced your life and why. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
So we'll start it out with our first caller. Good morning. Good morning, Lee.
Hi. I got some statistics that I think are fairly frightening and certainly changed my perspective. On November 16th of 2010, the Oregonian cited some statistics from the Nielsen Media research, and they indicated that 35 hours and 34 minutes were the number of hours and minutes that the average American watches TV per week.
35 hours, you said?
35 hours, 34 minutes.
Oh, like a work week almost.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And the other issue that's even more frightening is that 25 hours and 48 minutes the number of hours and minutes that kids ages 2 to 11 watch TV per week.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is startling and it is frightening, and especially given the fact that, as we mentioned, there are elements, themes, and concepts that will shape our minds, and so these young developing minds exposed to who knows what doesn't bode well for families or society.
Well, there's a book that by Vine Deloria Jr. and Daniel Wildcat called Place and Power,
mm-hmm.
Indian Education in America, and Wildcat makes a comment stating, welcome to the brave new world, not Huxley's book, but the citadels of contemporary DNA science. Orwell's 1984 had it half right. Big Brother need not worry about watching you, nor you worry about being watched by Big Brother, so long as he is sure you are watching him. Okay? So that the influence that TV has on culture and the way we think is just overwhelming to the point where it really is manipulating our minds. If you think about it, people are getting, if there's 12 minutes of commercial time in each hour of programming on television, you're watching an hour of commercials a day.
Well,
this is true, and this is not saying how commercials or the not too subtle commercials are part of a lot of programming. So whether in terms of
even the programming is a commercial quite often.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and I also have a Ziggy cartoon with him watching TV, and you know, coming out of the box is, the following program has been made possible by rich, powerful people who want to control your mind.
There it is, right there. Well, thanks, Lee, for putting a sobering spin on it and just making us aware of the I guess the best way I would say is the meta programming of the programming.
Well, the thing I think you said it is it's 35 hours, 34 minutes. That's a work week.
Yes.
And imagine what this country would do if we shut our TVs off and, one, interacted with other people, specifically our neighbors, or causes that are relevant to the survival of our species, and you know, what will we do instead that would be productive?
Well, that's true. I think the secret is to, like, not watch programming with anything that has a lot of stuff that you shouldn't eat or buy on it.
That's all of it, isn't it?
Almost, isn't it? That's almost. That's my point. A little tongue-in-cheek, but that is my point.
Okay. Scott,
all right, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, I almost feel like this is a good time to talk about that one commercial that inspired me.
Well, let's hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. How many of you remember watching commercials? Oh, gosh, now you really have to be my age. For the Peace Corps. I remember watching those commercials, and many of them at the end would have the quote from John F. Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it would show all of these things that people were doing around the world to be a help. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm old enough now to see the still subtle propaganda from U.S. international policy. But at the same time, the thought of helping somebody, totally altruistic, it struck me so deep that when I went to Dallas and I went to the memorial, I bought that particular set of footage because I wanted to watch those ads again. And that sparked me in many ways to really want to work in community building. And one of the reasons why I went into AmeriCorps, because at the time Peace Corps was, it was undergoing some changes. And I said, well, I'll stay here and work, because sometimes you need to work at home. And I did AmeriCorps instead. But that was a profound effect. That shaped my life, I think, a lot more than any TV programming.
Well, it seems as if the programs you mentioned in terms of All in the Family and MASH, for example, and then about this commercial, show the positive transformation that can come. So I recognize and agree with what Lee had to say in terms of how media shape our worldview and how we spend too much time in front of the screen. But you offered an example of how the media can shape in a positive way.
Yes.
And the challenge, I guess, is why are we sitting in front of the TV 35 hours a week, and our kids are sitting in front of the TV 25 hours a week, and I won't even begin to talk about how much time we waste looking into our personal devices instead of speaking to one another.
Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So if there is a television show that helped you form an opinion of the world that's had a lasting and profound effect on you, we like to share it regardless of what the show is. Now, we do have a few ground rules, you know, nothing obscene, no personal attacks, et cetera, et cetera. And if you didn't bring chocolate chip cookies, you may not get on the line at all. No, I'm kidding. But the phone number is 503-231-8187. Join us here at the Electronic Conversation Table. Good morning, Brian.
Oh.
Yep, that's
good
you.
Yeah, no chocolate chip cookies, I'm afraid. No.
Home-baked.
I'll take off my shoes and hum to you if you want.
No, we'll pass.
Yeah, as a foreigner, I came here first in the late 70s, and 1970s, that is, and, you know, I grew up with the BBC, which is still, I think, the best in the world. For world news and anything else. But, you know, I don't watch TV anymore. I consider it to be vapid stuffing between ever-lengthening commercials, you know, especially the local news. I mean, God, it's awful. I get all my news and world affairs from KABU and reader-supported news and the likes. But when I first came here, there were some really great sitcoms like I think Taxi is one of the best ever.
Taxi, yeah.
They were all about working people. Mm-hmm. You know, they were like, you know, even, you know, Archie Bunker was based on a BBC series.
Unfortunately for us Yanks here, quite a few of our programs, like Sanford and Son, was based on Steptoe and Son.
And, you know, Taxi, to me, they were all real actors. They all had theatrical backgrounds, too. And Taxi was more like theater than and some amazing creative characters. But, you know, there was Alice, which was about
A waitress.
And you know, what do you call it? You know, even Happy Days is about Pollyanna, but it was working people. You know, what do you call it? The two ladies that worked in the brewery. Anyway, the point I'm making is they were all about working people, working class. They could, you know, be in any kind of industrial or small or even small town. But now the little bits I do occasionally get to see because I'm in somebody else's house or in a bar, it's just absolute vapid, empty, nothing, and the commercials get longer and longer. So that's my take. There's nothing since that time. You know, Taxi was about the last thing I ever watched.
So,
Cheers.
Yeah, before we let you go, I just wanted your reflection. The programs you mentioned and the fact that they focus on working class people, they also seem to create characters who were multifaceted, who dealt with real situations.
Real issues.
But in a way in which they weren't made into cartoon characters, which may be something different from...
Yeah, well, they actually gave me a little look at working-class Americans, which, if you look at TV now, if you must, I wouldn't have a TV if my wife didn't like to watch some of the old movies, but they showed me the, you know, if you look at TV now, we think there is no working class. Yeah, they gave me a realistic view of the way a lot of grassroots Americans lived. And even then, there was even some decent news worth watching still, you know. And they gave me an initial impression of Americans, which I would not have got now. Although maybe they are true now, because maybe, you know, people live pretty vapid, empty lives if they, you know, they all, you know, if they work in little cubicles and little offices and don't make anything.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your call.
So that's it from a foreigner.
All righty. Take care.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM. And we're speaking about media and its role and influence on our lives. Our last caller was sharing some of his impression when he first came to the States that he received from television and its portrayal of working class Americans. I guess, you know, I don't know how many programs there are in today on television that are dramas or comedy written as opposed to so-called reality TV. So that's a whole other.
Well, I was trying to escape reality TV. Yeah, that pun was intended. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really reality. It is highly scripted, and it's not scripted necessarily to deal with a concept in a cohesive and enlightening fashion. Mm-hmm. It's really meant to titillate and to inflame and to, I guess, encourage a different level of consumerism and envy and strife. So I wasn't including them.
I was just contrasting. And and in point in fact, of what you're saying about reality TV has certainly been said about television
in general
for the last 60 years. So our numbers are 503-231-8187. We want to hear your thoughts on the media, what influenced you, and thoughts like that. Let's go to Harvey. Good morning, Harvey.
Hello, Cecil, and hello, Celeste.
Good morning.
Thank you for the show. And I have a few comments to say about television itself. And it's a tricky thing. First of all, I watch the radio. It's a lot easier on my eyes.
Mm. Yeah, I found that.
But I find that when I listen to the radio, I can do things as well as, you know, indulge in thought and interaction as well, like I'm doing on your show. And I like that. I like that. I feel more personable about. So the radio is my media, and I feel freed up from TV in that sense. Now, let's talk about TV. TV, you know, the eye tracks motion. It's our most ancient defense when we were back in the time of living in caves. Anything that moved in the periphery might have been lethal, like an animal or marauding other tribe. Who knows what, mm-hmm. other tribes. So the eyes are placed the highest organ on the body so that we can see the furthest. That's why the eyes aren't at our kneecaps. Mm. And the farther we can see, the more we can defend ourselves. But anything that moves, the eye automatically tracks motion. I mean, that's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. So you move, you come to the present. And so you're sitting in your living room, the rug's not moving, the curtain on the wall's not moving. What's moving? Your TV. And it captures the eye. Motion captures the eye. And they know that, so that in the olden days, say, like when they had the news and you'd see Walter Cronkite, everything was stationary except him talking. Now if you watch the news, there's all kind of shifting in the background. There's little banners of words going by. There's all kind of action. They've learned never stop the motion, because the moment the motion stops, the eye can break free, and so it's not hypnotized. So they know to never stop the motion. On commercial TV, they trap you. The eye is automatically trapped, and using one of our most ancient senses to trap us. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that Marshall McLuhan was right. The mm-hmm. media is the message, and a captured eye is a hypnotized eye. And the thing is that they can sell us, once we're locked in, they sell us paranoia like the news. And the problem is that they create all this bad news. They take real news, like a murderer here who murders family in L.A., some sort of rapist in New York, and they put it together one side by each. And they actually make people paranoid. Mm-hmm. And this paranoia causes people to self-incarcerate. They're thinking, I'm not going out there. They're all killers out there. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is, what do they do when they're at home? They watch more TV. So they've created their own audience. And then they sell them all what I call acid-based foods. Pepsi, Coke, coffee, pizza, you name it. It's all, if you look under the foods that are alkaline or acid, the body wants more alkaline, more greens, more kale and all that, but you won't see that advertised. Basically, you'll see all the acid foods. And then, once you got these acid foods in your system, then they sell you the Prep H, the Tums, the Pepto-Bismol, the medicine. And it's a kind of, also, Archer's Daniel Midland found that when people are under stress, they eat more. So they sponsor the McNeil Lehrer half-hour news report. So it's a kind of a manipulation behind mm-hmm. the scenes of the using our senses, using all these tricks to get us to eat more, to buy bad food. It's not a good deal in my mind, and okay. that's why I prefer the radio. That's
okay.
just a couple of the reasons, but those are some of the things that I feel are very negative about TV and why we should. It's basically unhealthy. Now, I'm not saying there aren't good programs. There are some great programs, but the overall scenario, I'd rather watch the radio.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Harvey. Okay. And you gave me a lot to think in your remarks. Especially as you began your remarks, I now know why my eyes aren't on my knees. Thanks a lot, Harvey.
Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Unless we get the impression that we think that televisions in the old days were so much better, I was thinking a previous caller, Brian, who mentioned some watching television, and he mentioned in passing working class Americans, and mm-hmm. I never watched this program a lot, and again I think this is a British import, but The Office was
was redone from a British program,
but that was dealing with ordinary people, like I suppose.
Well, there's a few, but I'm wondering. One of the things that we set out and to explore in this episode of the program is how programs profoundly influenced you.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I'm curious to hear how some programs have done that. There's been a few of our callers who mentioned some program and how it dealt with it. But, you know, we're hearing about the evils of TV. Well, that's not disputed. Mm-hmm. That's not disputed. That's one reason why I don't have cable TV, and I don't really watch network TV. I go online. But I'm curious to hear how shows have influenced you. And like I said, even a good commercial, because all ads are not necessarily about selling you a tangible product. Sometimes it's about trying to inspire you. I also remember the Don't Litter commercials, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But some of those were really controversial, right. you know.
Well, I wanted to share one commercial, which I think Harvey might have a laugh. Our last caller, he was talking about acid and food, mm-hmm. food product. But I remember a commercial from when I was a kid that maybe it was the time, but it was in terms about how we are living in such a mess in the world and how we need to get together. And so there was this commercial from a soda company about people coming together and
how
to teach the
and
world
sing,
to sing together.
Singing a song,
so,
yeah.
It had some good, although I probably went out and bought a soda pop afterwards.
I didn't like that soda pop. It was too sweet. I liked the one my mom drank. And then I really don't drink soda pop now. But it did teach us to sing.
Okay.
Because, you know, we didn't know anything about song before that.
No, but there were people of different ethnicity as they climbed that mountain.
Because they wanted everybody to buy that product.
Well, let's hear what some of our more insightful listeners have to say. Rick, good morning.
Good morning. In terms of being influenced by shows on TV, I mean, I know people have been talking about the negative side of watching TV. I don't know. What about public TV?
I used to love public TV.
If I'm watching TV, I see stuff on Channel 10. I've seen incredible stuff on Channel 10. Some of the documentaries about things that are going on that I had no idea about. I mean, it's just endless number. I have a file where I take notes when I watch some of those programs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't have cable. Hey, there's some really good TV on OPV. I mean, shows like Independent Lens, and just, you know, I don't know all the different, you know, series of shows. But sure. And sometimes they're on, you know, really late at night, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So, you know, for some people, they might not be up. But there's some incredible stuff on public TV.
Yes.
And that's really influenced me. I mean, just stuff in the world that's going on.
So tell us one show that really profoundly influenced you.
Well, I can tell you one. I mean, this is something I knew nothing about. There was a documentary on about a situation in India where women have what they call fistulas. You know about that?
A little graphic for morning radio, but yes, I do.
Well, I know. Well, we don't have to go into it, but it was just, for some reason, I mean, you asked me one that just kind of stuck in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea at all. And, you know, that it just like hundreds of thousands of people go through that experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so things like that, I mean, are just, you know, I think, you know, on TV, there's no other way I would have known about that.
Right. Well, you know, when I was young, and this is probably before PBS became a official network, we used to call it, you know, the education channel. So TV can be educational, as you suggested. And thank you for reminding us to look at alternative programming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, definitely. I mean, I listen to the radio, you know, I listen to cable. You know, I think it's just a matter of balance, and it's interesting, you know, to just, you know, see the contrast in terms mm-hmm. of what's being reported, how it's being reported. As far as being influenced by it, like the commercials, I don't know about you, but I have never bought anything because I saw a commercial on TV. I mean, I watch commercials, and I think, are people actually influenced by the commercials any way at all? It's amazing to me because they must be, though. I'm just amazed more than anything. I've never bought anything because I saw a commercial.
Well,
okay,
that you're aware of.
I'm going to fess up, okay? And I really don't mind if people laugh at me and hoot. It's okay.
That's all right, yeah.
But there was one commercial that not only influenced me because I wanted to taste it, and I wasn't really all that enthralled once I had actually tasted the product, but it inspired me to want to go visit the city. And that was, dare I say it, Rice-A-Rooney.
Sure. Rice-A-Rooney.
Man, I wanted to go to San Francisco so bad. I ended up living there and riding the, you know, the little trolleys and all that, you know, because it was the San Francisco treat, man. And it just made like San Francisco look so much better looking than the food. You know, the food was secondary. Going to San Francisco was what was important to me. But yeah. Thank you for your call.
You bet.
And I know I'm going to get teased for that.
It's San Francisco treat.
Yes.
Well, you know, one commercial that influenced me, or I thought would influence, we were kids, and, you know, Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
And you watch that. So I remember one, you know, maybe we had been assaulted by these commercials for a couple of weeks. And so we finally convinced our parents, dad and mom, to buy us this breakfast cereal. So we could hardly wait to go to sleep on Friday night because we would get up on Saturday morning and eat our breakfast cereal. So we got that. You know, we woke up early Saturday morning, went to the kitchen, opened up the new, brand new cereal, and found that I hated it.
Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, it was some sugary sweet thing that tasted nasty. But I saw those commercials over and over. Had to get to it.
Because, you know, it was going to open up new vistas for you of deliciousness. Not to say, you know, change everything.
But it didn't. Yeah. Our numbers again, 503-231-8187. What are television programs that have influenced you? Art, are you there?
I am. Thank you for the show. I'm kind of old now. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up when there were cowboy shows on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched Roy Rogers, and I watched a lot of the singing cowboy movies and Shirley Temple movies, all of which were somewhat older than I am, but, you know, were on the air in reruns for a long time. And, you know, I know that it's kind of artificial now, but that code of the West, and you know that justice will win out, and that you know, bad guys will get their comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
It's this big, still a big undercurrent in societal beliefs.
Yes.
But I came through that and you know, shows that were a little more contemporary. Laugh-In was a big break for I think the country at large, because it brought a lot of humor and silliness. You know, that was considered okay, and but it layered a lot of politics
into social commentary. Yeah.
Oh yes.
What was discussable and a lot of counter points of regular political views. Later on, Mork and Mindy, some of the same things, but you know, with a broader brush and a smaller crew.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about a lot of current events, and they talked about a lot of interpersonal stuff more than some other shows had done. You know, people that were different and getting along with people or not getting along with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was useful. And on the Channel 10, you've had a couple of great callers, and you asked one about what was a significant Channel 10 program that they'd seen, or a public television program. And there was a documentary on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes. Turning point for unions.
Yeah, well, also just building safety, building inspection.
Mm-hmm.
That same issue is, you know, come to the head
today.
In foreign countries now, they lost 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Bangladesh
in a factory fire, mm-hmm. and they're just, you know, bringing the kind of pressure to bear. You know, the owners of that factory have been prohibited by the courts from leaving the country, and in the old days they would have skated. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd have just got out with their money and done something else somewhere else, but they may actually face the music. Hmm. And I think that's something that's useful that television has done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those things are available online, or that people can research them.
Yes.
I have, my kids are grown up now, they're out of college, but Sesame Street, big groundbreaker.
For sure, for sure.
You know, just it made learning fun.
Yes.
It did the kind of things that we hoped television would be able to do, to engage young minds in a creative way, to make learning and getting along with people and being exposed to the wider world not scary, but entertaining and absorbable.
All right.
And way before that, it was Lamb Chop and Friends, you know.
That's true. Yeah, I remember that as well. Well, thank you so much for your call.
One quick touch, those products that we thought would be wonderful and weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Tang.
Oh, gosh. Now, I liked it when I was a kid, but, you know, then you finally realize you're drinking orange something.
But that the astronauts used it. And
That only carried me so far.
Yeah, that was the sell, and then got it on the market.
Yeah,
Mama came, we had some Tang.
Yeah.
Oh, good golly.
Not so much.
All right, well, thank you for your call, Art.
Good day.
Uh-huh. Where are the women? Where are my sisters at? Come on. Join in the conversation, because we had a chance to watch ourselves be presented in a much more honest and engaging and intellectual fashion. Come on.
Okay.
503-231-8187. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio.
And let's go to Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hi, good morning, Celeste. Good morning, Cecil. One show I think about a lot is The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
It really had a big impact on me. It had this kind of fierce, uncompromising moral vision, and it explored the impacts that of the moral choices that ordinary people make. I remember they had one episode, Employee of the Month, where the psychiatrist, she could have asked her patient, Tony Soprano, to have this guy who had raped her killed. And she, you see her break down in the process of trying to decide over this, and she decides that that's not the way she's going to go. She's not going to, you know, choose to have someone murdered just because she couldn't have him dealt with through the courts. And the way the other people dealing with the consequences of the choices they make, it doesn't necessarily have to be a mob boss. It could just be an ordinary person who makes a right choice or a wrong choice. Mm-hmm. And it also even showed that sometimes making a right choice might not pan out well. You might not feel good about it, though in the long run, you did the right thing. But you can, you could end up having some fallout for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I like the fact that you talk about how it just takes the idea of a choice and branches it out and shows possible consequences, good or bad, from good or bad choices. And I see that more of an aspect of modern TV than it was so much some of the earlier TV, unless it was cutting-edge shows like maybe Perry Mason or The Twilight Zone. You know, and that's one of the things that I do enjoy about a lot of new programs is that they manage to deal with some of the grit of life without making you feel dirty and engaging your mind. Besides The Sopranos, were there any other shows that also influenced you but maybe in a different direction or maybe made you contrast and compare with Sopranos?
Yes, like Cecil, I love cartoons, especially the old Warner Brother cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan of Roadrunner.
Yep.
Tweety Bird.
Mm-hmm. Super Chicken was one of mine because he knew the job was dangerous when he took it. Yeah. Yeah, I could sing the song, but I need some respect in this society. But I just remember his quote is like, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it. So, you know, I can't complain.
I'm going to have to YouTube.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, Super Chicken. Hey, thank you, Leslie.
Yes, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, let me put in a word for Underdog and Mighty Mouse.
Yeah. Cartoons took a radical change, though. They started becoming inane and absurd, but not in a helpful way. Because I remember the first time I saw Dogcat, I told my sister, I said, that's an abomination. What's its mom and dad? A frog and an abominable snowman? I said, how do you get around the fact that this being, such as it is, actually is a dog on one end and a cat on the other? I just said, seriously.
And seriously, folks, as I'm not familiar with that one. But
it's probably best you're not.
Okay.
There's a few of those that I thought were brain-eater cartoons. Okay.
So before we go to our next caller, let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil with my co-host Celeste. At 9 is the OMO Variety Hour, a program of social commentary, political commentary, from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We will hear Professor and author Michael Clear about the arms pouring into Syria from Russia. At 10:15, Barbara Bernstein, host of Locus Focus. Topic is keeping GMO from spreading in the Willamette Valley. As GMO wheat goes rogue in Oregon, she presents another interview with food activist Clinton Lindsay. At 11 on Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman interviews Temple Grandin about her new book, The Autistic Brain.
Yay!
Thinking of Across the Spectrum. And at 11:30 on Madness Radio, host Will Hall interview Gary Greenberg, practicing psychotherapist and author of The Book of Woe, The DSM and the Unmaking of Psychiatry. Thanks, Cable Member, for your generous support. If you're not a Cable Member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And let's go to our next caller, Reggae Bob.
Hey, what's up, RB?
Good morning. Yeah, I couldn't not get in on this one because, you know, TV is a big part of my life. So I probably go 60-40 with radio, 60% of my time, entertainment time, radio, 40% TV. And what I think about TV for me is the escapism. Mm-hmm. And more for the movies, watching the movies on TV. You know, like, you know, there's so many movies available on cable, and you got your choices, your different choices. Movies, I guess movies is different than TV. But coming to TV, sports. Talk about, especially in the earlier days when folks, black folks especially, could only hear sports on the radio. You couldn't afford the early TVs, and you like Dr. Joe Louis episode, listen to Joe Louis box on the radio. And things really changed when we got to watch boxing on TV. So many African-American black folks was boxing. One thing, a couple of shows that do it for me these days, TV shows, I gotta start off with Cops. I gotta start off with Cops simply because, well, Cops, two things with Cops. One is, you know, there is some entertainment value. There are some people doing things on there that you just really can't believe human beings are doing that.
Yeah, it's like you realize that why they tell you stay in school and why they say dope is dumb.
True that. And, you know, it's not, people aren't always getting hurt. Sometimes people get hurt, but a lot of times they don't get hurt. They show some amusing ones.
Yeah,
and
you know, I'm going to tease you about that, Cops.
Yeah. and part two of Cops is that it's just amazing that there are really people out there like that. Now, I drive a taxi cab for a living. I have people, you know, strangers in my car every day.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that they too, or anybody, you know, those people are really out there. So it helps me be extra cautious. You know, I don't pick up strangers. They always make sure that I know who I'm picking up. And another thing about TV, I'll get quickly here. I remember back during the race riots, during the
Rodney King
Civil Rights Movement.
Oh, Civil Rights,
I remember real strongly, as much as was going on and a lot of pleading to the president to get troops down to help the black folks during the riots, he didn't really act, President Kennedy, until he actually admitted seeing it on TV, until he saw it himself, until he finally acted on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Thank you, folks. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you for bringing up some really important points.
And you know that. And you know the last point you were talking about, the impact television had on in terms of the transformation of this country concerning civil rights. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Birmingham campaign, which was the first public introduction through the media of the viciousness of American apartheid, and how police and used vicious tactics against peaceful protesters. Those images, which were in black and white, inundated America and throughout the world and made a transformation, contributed to the transformation of this country. Let's go to our next caller, who is Vernon. Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning, Cecil. Your engineer made me laugh. I said I wanted to tell you how TV had affected me, and he said, I hope it's reversible. And, you know, I've been thinking about it. I've been feeding the chickens while I waited for you, and I was thinking about it, and I don't think it was. I don't think it was reversible at all. When I was 12 years old, every night, this was 1968, every night I watched Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
Oh my goodness, I remember them.
They showed me the Tet Offensive. They showed me the Democratic Convention in Chicago. They showed me that I couldn't trust my government. that I...
Oh, wait, back up.
The world was a nasty place.
Tell me how they told you that you couldn't trust your government. That's profound.
My government was taking kids into the jungle and making them kill people.
Okay.
And they showed me that reality.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first war on TV, and one of the last real wars on TV. I mean, we had the Nintendo wars of later years, but that wasn't the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
With Vietnam, we got the gritty reality in our face every night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that affected me seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I mean, the quest to end war has been a central part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the recognition in, you know, with that 68 Democratic Convention, that don't ask Jack to help you because he'll turn the other ear. You know, we realized that the politicians were not there for us.
Right.
That they were paid for by somebody else, and they would just hire thugs to beat us up if we got too uppity.
Mm-hmm. You got cheeky, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all those realities, you know, at 12 years old, all of that stuff came home to me, and it's been real all my life, and it's getting more and more real, it seems. But
I wrote a
story, you know, it was an article in the 80s. So it was called Getting Past Hawkers. It was about how I dealt with the reality that advertising does affect me seriously. And that, you know, I mean, even if you don't watch the ads, well, especially if you don't watch the ads, actually, just having it in the background affects you. Just watching the programming that's chosen by the people who pay for the ads.
Exactly.
It will affect you. And so I wrote an article about how I killed my TV. And, you know, they make a neat little pile because the vacuum tube. I don't know if modern TVs do that, but the old TVs, you know, had a vacuum tube in the middle. So when you throw them, then they shatter, but everything sucks into a neat little pile.
Yeah, because of that vacuum. That vacuum tube.
Oh.
Yeah. No, they don't make them like that anymore, and they have that thick glass. Yeah.
That was one of the really fun moments of my life was when I caught that television.
Hey, is there anywhere where we can read your article? Is it online?
Yeah, it's out there. It's in Context Magazine, Getting Past Hawkers.
Okay.
It's old, but it's actually still fairly accurate.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And it's 8:56, and I know we got a couple more calls, so we'll try to squeeze them in carefully.
Before we go to Diane, Judith wrote in, and she said, Picket Fences was a great show that featured complex moral dilemmas and showed them in a multifaceted way.
Ah, okay.
So let's see if we can get Diane in possibly as our last call this morning.
Good morning, Hi. Diane.
Good morning. I wanted to just call and say that Roseanne made a huge impact on me growing up.
Oh, yeah.
While there was many shows about, you know, poor black families, and I certainly watched those, like What's Happening and all of them, Good Times, all of them. Roseanne was the first one I saw a poor family kind of growing up and dealing with issues that were really, really relevant to me that didn't look like me.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it kind of created a sense like, okay, I'm not just, only black people aren't the only people that are poor.
Mm-hmm.
So that impact was made on me from that show.
You know, speaking of families and TV shows that made impact, I remember when my parents got divorced, I think it was One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who got divorced had the two daughters, and that reminded me. That woman reminded me so much of my mom. So, I like that you mentioned that there's people who don't necessarily look like us, but they feature a universal theme that still strikes us and makes us feel connected some kind of way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Diane.
Have a good day.
You too.
So you have been listening to More Talk Radio. We've been talking about television on radio.
We've been talking about the media influencing us. So, you know, I think we should assign people homework.
Okay.
And then, you know, send us, hit us up on our website with your thoughts. I'd like to hear one new show that you think is profoundly influencing your younger relatives, and talk about whether it's a pro or con and how you all talk about that show. Some people, it might have been, for example, Beavis and Butthead or something along those lines. lines. But talk about a show that you noticed having a profound effect on some of your younger family members and how you engage over that show, whether you say don't watch it or you share the moment or what have you. And then share it with us at More Talk Radio at www.kboo.fm/More Talk Radio. Why? Because we're your community connection, and we'll hear you next week.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th, second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. The time is 9:01. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You can learn the power of media and how to use that power to become a participant in change. You're now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO. This program has also been made possible in part by the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning, and welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour on 90.7 FM KBOO Portland, Oregon, and streaming live and around the globe at www.kboo.fm. Joe Clement is our engineer this morning, and I'm your host, Ivan Hale. The Old Mole Variety Hour is brought to you by a collective think tank of sorts consisting of radicals from a variety of backgrounds with a variety of definitions of what it means to be radical. We explore topics with a Marxist, leftist, feminist lens, and like Karl Marx's moles, we grub, burrow, dig, and agitate to bring you a provocative, thoughtful, and informative radio show. We focus not just on political critique, but also on the ways that we can all make a difference and, in the best use of the term, indeed, make mountains out of molehills. Our hour today begins with Bill Resnick talking with Nancy Cronick about access and control of information on the Internet. Then Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker review the new DSM-5 and its huge influence on our mental health system. After that, Tom Becker gives us a well-read read. And finally, Movie Moles Fran Michel and Jan Hawken review The Reluctant Fundamentalist, a new movie by Mira Nair. All right, well, just had a little bit of a change in plan, and instead of going with Bill Resnick and Nancy Cronick first, we're going to cut straight to Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker reviewing... What are they doing? Let's see. That's right. Left in the Law, Mike Snedeker and Jan Hawken.
Well, this is a book review of a sort. This week, the American Psychiatric Association released the fifth edition, the fifth and, we might say, very bulky, hefty edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the authoritative text on the diagnosis of mental conditions. Although the DSM classification system has been the focus of public controversy throughout its history, this new manual has generated a level of public revolt unheard of in its history. The reaction to homosexuality as a disorder led to quite a major protest against the DSM in 1970, early 70s. It was part of a broader feminist and anti-psychiatry movement. But the reaction to the new manual includes many of the designers and researchers behind the project itself. Well, Mike, both of us have been under the influence of DSM in various areas of our work, including work in legal and forensic settings. So let's talk today about the implications of this new manual and the whole DSM project and the thinking that guides it for legal decisions. Maybe starting with what has been the progressive aspects of the DSM. Even though it has been guided by psychiatry and it's published by the American Psychiatric Association, that whose coffers are vastly enriched by each new edition, it is a larger project of the mental health field that provides a kind of pass for people to access services. What would we say before we take up the critics? What would we say in its favor about this whole system for looking at people's troubles?